is a ceasefire deal at hand.
Hamas has before it a proposal that is extraordinarily, extraordinarily generous on the part of Israel.
Plus, is the International Criminal Court preparing to hand down indictments to Israel and Hamas?
It may be possible to prosecute or indict military people or politicians from Israel, even though Israel is not a party to the International Criminal Court.
And later, American weaponry is starting to arrive in Ukraine, but is it enough? We'll have an update from Kyiv. Today is Monday, April 29th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The World Economic Forum got underway Sunday in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, where Saudi Arabia's foreign minister, Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud, stressed the need to solve the Gaza conflict once and for all.
It is in everybody's interest in the region. Our interest, the interest of the Palestinians, the interest of the Israelis, the interest of the global community of nations, that we find a pathway to resolve this issue once and for all. Because that's the only way we are going to avoid, first of all, a repeat, but also we're going to avoid that the suffering that has happened on all sides happens in vain. This is just not an approach that is possible.
The session also included remarks from the European Union High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, who highlighted the importance of continued support for Ukraine in its war against Russia.
We have to continue supporting the people in Ukraine. The Europeans will not go to die for the Donbas, but we could avoid the Ukrainians to have to die for the Donbas longer. And I know this is a difficult question, and many people could say, well, for how long do we have to spend so much money? Well, if we committed to support Ukraine when the war started, we have to continue supporting Ukraine until the Ukrainians are able to resist. And until Putin decides to stop this war. But it will not happen soon. Sorry.
Borrell's remarks aside, the major story from Riyadh is the war in Gaza and the ongoing negotiations between the Israelis and Hamas. It's at that meeting that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged Hamas to swiftly accept Israel's latest proposal for a ceasefire, a proposal Blinken called extraordinarily generous.
Hamas has before it a proposal that is extraordinarily, extraordinarily generous on the part of Israel. And in this moment, the only thing standing between the people of Gaza and a ceasefire is Hamas. They have to decide, and they have to decide quickly. So we're looking to that, and I'm hopeful that they will make the right decision.
Hamas negotiators were expected to meet Qatari and Egyptian mediators in Cairo on Monday to deliver a response to the phased truce proposal that Israel presented over the weekend ahead of a threatened Israeli assault on the southern border city of Rafah. Blinken reiterated that the U.S. could not support an Israeli ground assault on Rafah in the absence of an Israeli plan to ensure that civilians would not be harmed. Rafah is where Israel says Hamas's last four intact battalions are holed up.
We strongly support Israel in its effort to ensure that what happened on October 7th never happens again. But at the same time, we are determined to do everything we can to bring an end to the terrible human suffering that we're seeing every single day in Gaza among children, women, men, who've been caught in a terrible crossfire of Hamas's making. And so maximizing protection of civilians, maximizing the support that gets to them, this is very much our focus. Now, the quickest way to bring this to an end is to get to a ceasefire and the release of hostages.
Meanwhile, in apparent preparation for that larger assault on Rafah, Israeli airstrikes on three houses in Rafah killed at least 20 Palestinians and wounded many others, medics said on Monday. This just as Egyptian and Qatari mediators were expected to hold a new round of ceasefire talks in Cairo. For its part, Hamas says it is reviewing the ceasefire plan put forth by Israel. This follows a visit to Israel by an Egyptian delegation where officials described a new vision for a prolonged end to hostilities. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Another night of protests in Tel Aviv as hundreds call for new elections and the ouster of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Anti-government protester Nadav Zohar speaking with Reuters.
I want for elections to be held, not in a year or two, but right now, as soon as possible. I want all the hostages back because I can see the government does not want them back.
Protesters say Netanyahu's government isn't doing enough to bring home the hostages, despite him recently having said Israel will increase both political and military pressure on Hamas. Anti-government protests have become more common since the Western-designated terror group Hamas stormed Israel October 7, killing roughly 1,200 people and kidnapping around 250, about 130 remain in captivity. Hamas's military wing released a video over the weekend that appears to show hostages Keith Siegel and Omri Meron sending messages to their families as the Jewish holiday Passover draws to a close at the end of April. The Reuters news agency was not able to independently verify when or where the video was taken. Since the Hamas invasion, Israel's air and ground offensives have killed more than 34,000 Palestinians, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Civilians and some lawmakers on both sides of the conflict continue to call for a brokered peace deal that would see hostages exchanged for an end to hostilities. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas speaking through an interpreter at the World Economic Forum in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, as provided by the forum and carried by AP.
The first thing we ask for is a ceasefire. And secondly, we want the humanitarian aid to be able to reach the Palestinian people who are in dire need of it in all of Gaza.
Abbas added that Palestinians would accept no human displacements from Gaza or the West Bank to locations outside of Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, in the Palestinian city of Rafah, an Israeli airstrike over the weekend killed at least six people, four of them children, according to local health authorities and confirmed by the Associated Press. Rafah's estimated population of 275,000 ballooned to nearly 1.4 million people since the war's start, according to the United Nations. And as the United States continues sending military aid to Israel in a war that has seen the destruction of most civilian infrastructure in Palestinian territories, protests popped up across a number of U.S. colleges and universities. Demonstrators call for solidarity with Palestinians and an end to U.S. support for Israel. Police arrested hundreds while universities suspended or expelled students. News of those protests traveled to Gaza, where displaced people living in tent cities spray-painted messages of thanks for support they received from half a world away. A recent foreign spending package out of Washington would see more than $9 billion in humanitarian aid for Gaza. An Egyptian delegation recently met with Israeli leaders to help broker a peace deal. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Egypt's proposal, if accepted, would see at least 3 weeks of ceasefire and an effort to stop an Israeli ground offensive in Rafah. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
As we've heard, there appears to be a proposal on the table. Secretary Blinken called it extraordinarily generous on the part of the Israelis, but what's in the deal? For a deeper dive into the negotiations and the politics behind them, I'm joined by Ricky Rosen in Tel Aviv.
There have been increased demonstrations during all of the Passover holiday on the part of hostage families and their supporters, because there's a sense that this may be the last chance for a hostage deal before the army would go into an invasion, an operation in Rafah, and that would scuttle the chances for a deal and could very possibly kill some of the remaining hostages who are alive. And especially after the release last week of two videos on the part of Hamas that provided a sign of life from the 23-year-old Hirsch Goldberg Polin and two older men, including also another Israeli-American, and all of whom appear in the videos to be well enough and to have survived over 200 days in captivity.
And what about Palestinians? Do we know how the Palestinian public might feel about the deal, but also what the Hamas leadership feels about the deal, what they might decide to do?
A senior Hamas official was quoted a few days ago as saying that he saw no major problems with this latest proposal. But then today, an official from the Hamas Politburo denied this report, saying that the proposal is still being studied. And I think that on the part of Palestinians, both in the West Bank and in Gaza, they are hopeful that any deal will be reached in order to achieve a ceasefire and allow for additional humanitarian aid to be brought in, and for what is seen by many as a humanitarian catastrophe in Rafah if the Israeli operation there does go forward.
Now, this is also tearing apart Netanyahu's government. There are some on the right wing of his coalition that are saying that if he extends this olive branch to Hamas to do this truce or postpone the invasion into Rafah, they'll withdraw from the coalition and basically tank the government.
There are two opposing sides in the Netanyahu government who are actually both using the same language. They are both claiming that if this hostage deal goes forward, the far right claims that the government will have no right to exist because the far right ministers, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, feel that there should be no delay of a Rafah operation. There should be no release of Palestinian prisoners in any deal possible. And on the other side, the more centrist Benny Gantz, who joined the government temporarily after October 7th to be part of the war cabinet, has also said that if the government does not accept this final chance, last chance hostage deal, it will have no right to exist. So I guess you could say that Netanyahu is between a rock and a hard place and doesn't have much maneuvering room, except for the fact that the opposition leader, Yair Lapid, said that if Netanyahu does accept the hostage deal, if it in fact is an actual deal, he will support the government from outside if the two far-right ministers try to bring it down.
We'll leave it there for today. Ricky Rosen reports for VOA from Tel Aviv. Ricky, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
The International Criminal Court, or ICC, which can charge individuals with war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide, is investigating Hamas's October 7th cross-border attack and Israel's devastating military assault on Hamas-ruled Gaza. In response to Israeli media reports that the ICC might soon issue arrest warrants for senior Israeli government and military officials, Foreign Minister Israel Katz on Sunday warned Israeli embassies to bolster their security because of the risk of a wave of severe anti-Semitism. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Friday that any ICC decisions would not affect Israel's actions, but would set a dangerous precedent. Israeli media reported that Israeli officials are worried that the court could issue arrest warrants against Netanyahu and other top officials for alleged violations of international humanitarian law in Gaza. They say the ICC is also considering arrest warrants for the leaders of Hamas. For a closer look at the ICC, my colleague Scott Walterman spoke with Bill Dunlap, a law professor at Quinnipiac University.
So let's start big picture on the International Criminal Court. What jurisdiction do they really have here?
Well, they have jurisdiction primarily over crimes committed by member states or crimes committed in member states. But there are some variations on that. And so it may be possible to prosecute or indict military people or politicians from Israel, even though Israel is not a party to the International Criminal Court.
But the Palestinians are. They let the Palestinians in when the United Nations gave them observer status, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They are members, and therefore it will be easier to justify any indictment against members of Hamas.
So in this instance where you have Hamas's October attack and then the Israeli response, what kind of crimes would the International Criminal Court be looking at to charge both Hamas and Israeli officials with?
Basically, crimes against civilians, against people who are not part of the ongoing conflict. The ICC has jurisdiction over four international crimes. Genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and the crime of aggression. Any charges that are brought would be brought against individuals, not against the state of Israel or against the Hamas organization. The International Criminal Court has jurisdiction only over natural persons.
Scott Walterman hosts International Edition. Here on The Voice of America, he was speaking with Bill Dunlap of Quinnipiac University. You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from The Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Australia has made public its donation to Ukraine's defense. That story coming up. Meanwhile, President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Monday that vital U.S. weapons were starting to arrive in Ukraine, but he noted the need for the process to move faster as Russian forces continue to make advances on the front lines. VOA's Lori London spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, who says Ukrainian troops have had to pull back in several locations over the weekend, particularly in the eastern frontline areas around Avdiivka.
The situation on the ground sounds like it's still really active and difficult. Russian troops have been pretty active, making advances in some strategic areas. What can you tell us?
Absolutely right. Despite this, you know, growing hope and positive emotions as U.S. aid was finally approved, still, Ukrainian forces, they're still waiting for the aid to arrive. And at this point, the situation on the front line is quite difficult. And on Sunday, the head of the Ukrainian army, Mr. Sirsky, confirmed that Ukrainian forces had to withdraw from certain positions in the eastern part of the front line around Avdiivka as Russian forces continue a certain advance. And the territory is not big, but still certain strategic points where Ukrainian forces were staying for some time, they had to withdraw from there, and Russian forces are currently taking a couple of villages under their control. The situation is extremely tough, and Sirsky is reporting that actually there are still quite a big lack of ammunition and manpower as well. But at this point, well, we can see that international experts, particularly Institute for the Study of War, also confirmed that Ukrainian forces had to withdraw.
Turning to another very tragic story. We understand two Ukrainian soldiers that were wounded in the fighting and getting treatment in Germany have been killed. What happened?
Yeah, so over the weekend, information emerged about two Ukrainian citizens killed in Germany. Ukrainian Ministry of Foreign Affairs confirmed that those Ukrainian citizens were wounded soldiers who were undergoing the rehabilitation treatment. And some time later, a German police confirmed that they arrested a person accused of killing those Ukrainian soldiers who turned to be a Russian citizen. So at this point, both Ukrainian Minister of Foreign Affairs as well as German police confirmed that this person is under arrest and further investigation is ongoing.
Lori London hosts Flashpoint Ukraine. She was speaking with our correspondent in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova. Sticking with the war in Ukraine, Australia has announced a military aid package for Kyiv worth around $65 million. The Canberra government is one of the largest non-NATO donors to Kyiv's war effort. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia's military aid package includes funding for drones, short-range air defense systems, inflatable boats and generators, as well as equipment like helmets, masks and boots. The additional funding was announced by Australia's Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles during a brief visit over the weekend to Ukraine. Marles told local media that the Canberra government is committed to supporting Ukraine to resolve the conflict on its own terms, adding that their spirit remains strong. Australia is also part of a multinational program to train Ukrainian troops in the United Kingdom through Operation Kudu. Canberra has also joined the UK-led so-called Drone Coalition to boost Ukraine's aerial defences. The new package brings Australia's overall financial support to Ukraine to more than $650 million. Phil Mercer, VOA News, Sydney.
Following weeks of heavy rain and flooding, a dam has failed in Kenya's Nakuru County on Sunday. It's still unknown how many people are dead or missing, but a witness says that rushing waters swept over a dozen houses away in the middle of the night. VOA's Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan rescue teams are searching for survivors swept away by flood Sunday night in the Mahimahiu area of Nakuru County. Heavy rainfall caused a dam to burst its banks, adding to the casualties from the flash flooding. John Karungu lives near the dam. He explains what happened to his neighbors when water entered their homes. He says the dam broke around 2:30 in the morning. We heard a loud noise from the riverside and we fled from the rising water. He says people on the downstream side pleaded for help as the rushing water engulfed their homes. We managed to rescue several children who were swept on the sides, he says, and pulled others from the waters, but sadly some were swept away. According to residents, at least 16 homes were swept away in the area. Kenyan Transport Minister Kipchumba Murkomen and Nakuru County Governor Susan Kihika visited the flood zone to assess the damage and mobilize authorities and agencies for rescue operations and aid distribution to the victims. Naivasha Police Commander Stephen Kirui told VOA they have recovered dozens of bodies and some of the survivors were admitted to hospitals in the area.
We have retrieved so far, we have retrieved about 45 bodies. We have not identified the sex and, of course, adults and children. We find out that a large number of 110 persons have been admitted in several hospitals.
Kirui said it was still raining in the area. Last week, the Kenyan Red Cross warned of more rains, called on Kenyans to brace for more flooding, and urged the population to take precautions. Kirui says they have managed to clear the roads, but the flooding threat persists.
I want to advise the members of public within these areas that they should keep off from the floods. They should move to higher grounds whereby they cannot be swept by water, because it's like there is a heavy rain which is coming and it might not be good.
Kenyan media reports that flooding has claimed the lives of more than 100 people since the rainy season began in mid-March. The flooding has prompted the Kenyan government to delay the reopening of schools until next week. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's going to wrap up today's show. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.